You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you've never tried out Built for the Stage yet, go to builtforthestage.com and I'd be happy, thrilled, ecstatic to work with you on an interactive fitness app. Built for the Stage trains actors across the globe from over 20 Broadway shows, the West End, Australia, international tours, national tours, collegiate programs, regional theaters. If you are in the market to train like the actor athlete that you are, then you are in the right place, my friend. I hope to get to chat with you soon. BuiltForTheStage.com. Check us out. Go to Instagram at BuiltForTheStage. Give us a follow. It would be greatly appreciated. All right. Today's episode is actually an excerpt from our family podcast over at Was It Chance, a part of the Broadway Podcast Network with hosts Heather Vickery and Alan Seals. You're going to get a little bit of insight on the history of Built for the Stage, as well as some history on yours truly. So enjoy the episode. Let us know what you think. If you have any questions, drop a comment. Reach out to us on Insta at Built for the Stage. And yeah, hope to hear from you soon. If you want, if you're still listening, DM me, podcast episode, Was It Chance? And I'll enter you into a drawing for some free swag. Just came up with that off the top of my head, but I'm in a giving mood. We have a lot of new swag that's out right now, and I want you to have it. So DM us, podcast episode, Was It Chance? And yeah, get yourself in that drawing for some free swag. Enjoy the episode. Later.
Yeah, the power of no is another big thing that I geek out on, just self-development. And that's a huge thing, is just the power of no, where it's not always about the yes or the willingness. It's sometimes it's harder to say no. It's harder to say, you know what, this sounds like a cool opportunity, but I'm really dialed in on this other thing. And if I say yes to this thing, it's going to take me away from my main focus and it's going to set me back inevitably.
Yeah. All right, make kick us away. Off, bruh, sis. What's the female equivalent of bro?
No, but if you ask my 13-year-old, it's just bro, B-R-O, bro, Yeah, it's bro good or it's bro bad. Bro, huh. Bet.
The kids nowadays, like, bro is the new term of endearment. Like, yeah, there's a meme saying, if I want to be, like, I don't know the exact wording, but if I want to be snotty or pretentious or whatever, I'll call you babe. But if I want to show you love, I'll call you bro.
Yes. and it's good and bad. My 13-year-old, bro, bet. Like, that's a fuck yeah. Yeah, I want that. And bro, for real, is no, man, don't do that. So, also, I'd be in trouble for saying bro because I'm old.
No, go ahead and own it.
I own it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Was It Chance, the podcast about embracing opportunity and taking intentional risk for your creative life. I'm Heather Vickery.
And I'm Alan Seals. Heather and I started out as two perfect strangers who met by chance and embraced opportunity. Listen in as we chat with other successful people about the risks they've taken to put themselves on a creative path to success. All right. I said that wrong. Path to creative success. You get it. You listen to past episodes. Heather, who's our guest today?
I'm so excited. This is the first chance that I have had to meet Joe Roscoe. Joe is the founder of Built for the Stage, and that happens to be Broadway's number one online fitness training platform.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, right. Whoop. And its accompanying podcast, which happens to be on the Broadway Podcast Network.
Yo. Whoop, whoop.
Shout out to BPN with over 200 episodes to date. Joe began his professional career as a trainer and an actor at the same exact time a trainer, and an actor at the same exact time in 2007. And since then, he has been on a mission to build a bridge between the worlds of fitness and theater, which I'm curious about because theater is fitness in my life. Joe mm-hmm. believed that actors were truly professional athletes. Oh, see, there you go. But didn't feel as though the theater community was equipped with the proper resources to train these theater athletes. This realization led to the creation of Built for the Stage. And Joe and his coaches pride themselves on having the unique ability to continue a performer's fitness progress while being in or out of a show. And Joe, I think that that's really cool and I can't wait to dig in. Welcome to Was It Chance?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Dude, Broadway performers, especially in musicals, are the Olympians. That Broadway's the Olympian of Olympics of theater, and I consider that like they are the Olympians of the theater space. And I love this approach that you've taken to embrace the fact that 8 shows a week, dancing and singing and acting your butt off, is a freaking hard work, yeah. and requires you to train and be conditioned, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Once is enough. 8 times is a whole other level. So as a former performer as well, I knew what that life was about, but I also knew what the actor's like nightlife was about, which is like, you know, going out after the show, kicking back a few, getting up the next day at around 12, like 30 minutes before your half hour call. And just kind of winging it. And if they did anything fitness, maybe it was like to take a dance class, or maybe they took some boutique like circuit training class, but definitely not training in the sense of what I in that intro was talking about, which was training like the athlete that they are.
So what do you say to the people who say they're already working out enough? 8 shows, like they're fucking tired. So I do want to know what you say to those folks. That was my question. But I also want to know, is it more about preparing your body, like protecting your body, than quote unquote training?
Yeah,
or is
I
it
mean,
the same.
It is the same. Training in its root, in its core, like back in the, I don't know, the caveman days, training was primarily to prevent injury.
Yeah.
Wasn't to like look sexy or run a fast mile or something. It was injury prevention. And then as we evolved as a culture and community, it took on different ebbs and flows. But to go back to your original question, when an actor is saying, I'm in a challenging show, or I'm already working out with my show, I just did a post on this on our Instagram at Built for the Stage, and you're doing the same thing every day. So your body's going to get into a neutral state and it's no longer going to be progressing. It's either going to stay the same or it's going to digress, and you're going to go down a one-way path to injury. And the second thing is that if you're only counting on your show as your physical activity, it means you're only as good as your show. And your show is not just one time like we mentioned, but it's 8 times. So would you not want to feel like it's your first show on your show 7 and 8 of that week, as opposed to feeling like you're hanging from a thread on that last day of the week? So we harp on our clients about training beyond your show. And you'll see this with any athlete. The NBA playoffs are going on right now. James Harden for the Philadelphia 76ers, I think he dropped like 40 points in a game. And then they have him on film in the locker room after doing a training session with his trainers where he's working out. He literally just played a 2-hour game and scored all these points, and he's working out. Why? Because he needs to challenge his body in different ways for the injury prevention we were talking about, and also to just make sure that his body is working in a different way than it is by just jumping or shooting or doing the movements he does within the training session, but something different, so that when he finds himself in a predicament on the court that could be at risk for injury, he's prepared in those different ways. And that's no different than an actor.
I want to go back to something you said a little while ago about like caveman day training. And I just want to ask if, like, did they have to invent the wheel first?
I was like, this is going to go bad fast. I know it is.
To then have the discus throw, or did they invent discus throw?
And when you last spoke with a caveman, did they?
Yeah. I actually just got off the phone with one before we started, and they invented the wheel not for any type of like transportation or moving heavy items. It was actually for the first cable machine setup, so that the so the cable wire could successfully, you know, go up and down on that wheel.
One clunk.
Oh, boy.
I have Ted Lasso vibes in my head, too, when you were talking about the training after the workout and whatnot.
Yeah, like, do you ever pull anybody on the bike?
Yeah, are you caught up with Ted Lasso? Do you watch that?
Because like, I'm not.
Okay, wait. This is a spoiler. If you are a Ted Lasso fan and not caught up, you
skip 15 seconds.
Skip 15 seconds.
And now. Yeah, Roy Kent is training the shit out of Jamie Tart for like being extra in the running all the time and doing all this extra stuff. I'm like, before and after all these games, and
badass.
I'm like, how does he do that in addition to playing these great games? But anyway, now you just answered my question.
Let's talk about Joe. Joe, can we go back, like all the way back? Let's talk about little Joe. What led you down a path? Well, this is serious, right? Because if we're talking about in taking intentional risk to create success, it's manifestation is never about, you know, thinking something and it magically appears. It's about declaring something and shifting the way we show up into the world, and then we create that thing. So can you recall the first intentional risk you took that kind of led you down this path? And did you know this was the path you were going down, or did it kind of surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, where I'm at right now definitely wasn't something that I saw for my future as a young child. So it was really the mixture of three perfect storms. One being that I started playing sports at 4 years old. Two, that I had a middle school girlfriend that convinced me to audition for the school play. And then three was that I always had an entrepreneurial spirit in me that I really didn't even realize. So the entrepreneur part, I can remember in third grade, I would use my lunch money to buy as many pencils from the pencil machine as I could, and they were all sports themed.
And you ate them?
I did not.
Oh, you said lunch money, sorry.
Yeah. I fasted that day. I was fasting at an early age before fasting was even quick.
Do you sing? Because this would be the appropriate time for Shut the Fuck Up, Alan.
I'll leave that up to you, Heather. I don't know if I know the melody for that certain line.
Every guest gets to make it up. It's okay.
Okay. Well, let's see how much Alan keeps razzing me, and I'll decide if I'm going to sing it later. But yeah, anyways, I would buy up all the pencils, and they were sports themed. So when you would buy a pencil, it'd come out at random. So you wouldn't be able to choose what pencil you got. So the pencils were 25 cents, and I would sell the pencils to the kids for a dollar because I could guarantee that I had their sport team that they wanted. I also remember begging my mom at the time for this plastic briefcase from Walmart because I was having meetings with my friend.
That's amazing.
Like, so I'd be riding my bicycle as an elementary school kid, and it was pink. I remember this too. There was no knock to pink, but I wouldn't have chosen it, but I was so obsessed over getting this briefcase. It was the only one there, and here I am. I'm riding down on my bike with this pink plastic briefcase to a meeting with a make-believe meeting with my friend. I also got Elmer's glue and put it in my shelf underneath my desk. You know, as a kid, you don't have a locker. You stay in the same room the whole time. So you have these little like bookshelves under your desk. So I'd let the glue dry and I would color designs on it. And somehow, the brilliant salesman I was, I would sell the dried colored glue to my classmates. I have no idea.
Wow, you can literally sell anything.
I guess so. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that's that. I grew up a three-sport athlete my whole life. And then in seventh grade, my middle school girlfriend wanted to audition for the school play. And as you know, when you're a kid, you don't have a car. You have no way of hanging out with your friends or significant other at the time. So you do extracurriculars, you know? So I was like, all right, I'll do it. I didn't want to be in the play. I just wanted to be around her. It was Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare play. And I was cast in the show, and she was not cast in the show. I did this show just to like be able to hang out with my little middle school girlfriend, and she wasn't even in the show. So I was there wearing, you know, makeup and tights for the next 2-3 months as this little like jock boy. And I'm like, what am I doing? I don't understand what we're saying because it's Shakespeare. I hate this. So the play's over. I'm done with theater forever. Except I'm in choir, and my choir teacher during a study hall said, we're doing Guys and Dolls Jr. I think you should really do it. I think you're really good. And she convinced me to do it. And of course, Guys and Dolls for me was like the perfect first musical, and I just freaking loved it. And ever since, I kept doing it. 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th. I got all the leads. I fell in love with theater. And I was really good at sports, so my coaches were like forced into working with me. To make this story longer, I hope I'm riveting all of our listeners. But to make the story longer, in sophomore year of high school, I was playing curly in Oklahoma, and it was baseball season in Ohio. And the weather's shitty in Ohio, you know, so you're having to practice in the basketball courts for most of the beginning of the season. So I was pitching in the basketball courts, and then my a girl from rehearsal at night would run to the basketball court to tell me my scene was coming up, and I'd stop pitching. Wow. I'd run to the theater to do my scenes, and then I'd run back to baseball practice once my scenes were over. So that's kind of like insight on my life.
That's
then.
Wild. No wow. wonder you can go the way you go.
Yeah, yeah. So then I wasn't really – I got good grades. I got like, I don't know, some 3, 6, or 7, whatever.
Yeah, but we were going to ask. We were not going to air the episode if your GPA
I know. I just say that, though, because what I was just going to say, and I'll say it now, is that I didn't really apply myself in school. So I did well, but, like, I wasn't really trying. And I didn't even know what I wanted to do. I wasn't like, I'm going to go to business school, or I'm going to be a doctor, or whatever. That was never on my radar. So finally I found out in my senior year that you could go to school for theater. And I was like, oh, amazing. I'd love to spend $130,000 to get a degree in acting. I'd love that.
Because that'll be that'll make it back real quick.
Where'd you go to school, Joe?
Exactly, yeah. So I ended up going to Coastal Carolina in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Originally, I'd gotten into a couple of programs. My number one choice was Penn State. I got into Penn State, but forget that. That was even more money that I would have tanked. I couldn't afford it.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And now we're back.
So I went down to Coastal, and it was a young program. I got cast in a show before. Basically, I got cast in a show off of my school admission audition, which was already made me a hated freshman walking in taking the seniors' sure. roles. Wow. So I hope none of them are listening. I love you guys. So I remember freshman year, I'm sitting in my dorm room, and I know this story is long, but it's answering the whole Built for the Stage story. So I'm sitting in my dorm room freshman year, and I hear the football announcements on Saturday, the game's going on, and I'm like crying in my room, missing football so much. So that spring, I walk onto the team and start playing football and doing theater. So I'm like up at 5 a.m. for weights, go to class, go to practice after, then go to rehearsal until 11, and then wake up and do it all over again and die, basically.
Ew.
So I got close with my strength and conditioning coach, and he was like, you should get your personal training cert. So I did at 18 years old. And then obviously all my friends are actors, so they're wanting to know how to work out, because a lot of actors just – they don't spend their time in the gym when they're younger. It's just kind of what it is. So that was it. Like, I started training actors at 18 and kept like traveling the country afterwards and during school doing gigs. And every new gig I'd go on, I'd meet new actors and they'd want me to train them, and I would train them. Should we take a break?
There's more, but
it's interesting to me that
there's like a lot of chance there.
18. Yeah, totally. Well, so at 18, you get your personal certification.
Easy for you to say.
That's right. And you were like, a lot of theater kids don't do that. And I was thinking like, well, right. Because
they're not athletes.
They're not. Well, so a lot of them. Well, Joe's changing that. You know, that's a stereotype, I think. But what am I trying to say? Is that... I would be intimidated as an awkward, skinny theater nerd to go into a gym with your actual athletes, especially in high school, right? Mm-hmm. So like,
yeah,
for you to be able to bridge both of those, I think is a huge sort of thing. Were you getting made fun of by your sports teams? Like, oh, you're going to do the theater thing? Or
Funny. Yeah, that's funny you brought it up. They actually, our town newspaper did like this feature on me about the whole theater and sports thing. And they would interview my teammates, and they would say, oh yeah, the things that Joe makes us listen to in his car when he's driving is just ridiculous, because it's like it's like musicals or just, I don't know, not some heavy metal or rap song. It's, you know, some artsy fartsy stuff that they have no idea what I'm having them listen to. But they would be front row center supporting me when it came time for my shows. I even got two of my football players to audition and be in one of the shows in high school. And then same for college. Like, my coaches would praise me in front of like the other football players. I got cast in a summer gig. So I was like the first player to get a job for the summer. And he was trying to push our college football team to like get our jobs for the summer. He's like, Roscoe got a job. He's going to Arizona to be in the show. And all these, you know, big 300-pound football players are looking at me like, who the F is this kid? But yeah, I don't know where we're going on that tangent, but yeah.
No, I love that. I think it's very cool. I mean, I heard in your whole story, opportunity, you know, unexpected, intentional risk, opportunity after unintentional, expected risk, opportunity. It's risky to try out for a play if you're a bro, right? I'm not trying to like put that on you, but you were an athlete.
Bro? Like a bro or a bro?
Like a bro.
Okay,
right?
Bro.
Like a middle school athlete, right? To go and you could play. I don't know you. You could play it. I'll be like, well, my girlfriend wants me to do it, man. I got to do it for her. But, you know, you did it. You tried this thing that, you know, people can give you a hard time for. You weren't planning on it. That was risk. And then you said yes to the next one, which you hadn't been planning on. Right. It just feels like, and then, oh, theater. I could go to school for theater. And then you walked on. We just like glanced over that. You walked on to the football field and you were like, I'm going to play football for you. Like,
yeah.
Here I
am. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that first year I ended up being the captain of the walk-ons. Being a walk-on, if anyone listening is familiar, it's like you're the low of the low. Like, you might as well, I don't know.
I thought Christopher was the captain of the walk-ons.
Okay. I don't know what that means.
I don't
Christopher
either.
Walk-on?
Oh my God.
I'm going to sing the song. I'm going to sing this.
Yes, just make it up. Just go for it.
Jeez. Alan, shut the fuck up.
Yes, Joe and I. We're friends.
I'll keep working on the melody, but the lyrics were there. The lyrics were there.
I feel seen.
But as a part of like training with Bill for the Stage, kind of like taking a hard right, but also in line with what you're saying, so much of everything in life, everything in life is mental. Everything in life is your mindset. Everything in your life is willingness. It's not about like how much you know, how talented you are. Like those are all factors. But when it comes down to it, it's like, if you see the doors cracked open, are you going to push it open and walk through it? And sometimes if the door is closed and locked, are you going to run that at full steam and just knock it over? Like these are just, anyone can do what, anyone that looks at someone and says, oh, I wish I could do what they're doing or be successful like they're being in relative to how they perceive success can do it. It's just a matter of doing it, literally. So I'll just say that.
No, I'm with that. Totally. I'm in the process of getting NLP certified, neuro-linguistic processing certified. And that's basically the core component of all NLP is life is what you decide it is, period.
Yeah.
And so they have all these mind, you know, tricks and systems and resources.
Alan doesn't agree.
No,
his face is like,
it's cool.
Into the whole like life is a simulation thing, which I know you kind of believe in, Heather, which
well,
I think is fascinating.
I mean, listen, when they give Nobel Prizes to physicists who can prove that the universe doesn't locally exist, then yes, I believe it.
Oh, I'm not saying I don't believe
but
it. I just think it's fascinating.
It is.
How many players removed are you, though? Are you like yourself playing yourself, or is there another person playing you that's playing you? Like how many phases, how many tiers are there?
Exactly. But actually they tie in, Alan, and I think that this is exactly what Joe is saying. In NLP, there are tools that we're being taught to literally change the way you feel about something that has happened in your life or what you expect to be true.
Psilocybin.
So it's still the same thing, right? If the universe doesn't locally exist and we're experiencing it, we can change it. That's why manifestation works. That's what Sammy Moog taught us when he was on the show. And that's what you're doing, Joe. You're like, look, this is going to be if you can. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. And it's really just a matter of deciding you want the result.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm never going to win the 100-meter dash in the Olympics because now I'm 35 and too old, and I also just never had that God-given ability. But I think it's also about, like, choosing your lane, too. Like, mm-hmm. I obviously, through my story, I told you things that I excelled in and how when those opportunities came, I took them, and then they eventually kind of morphed together. I think that some people get off track because they're trying to force something that's not really there when really they're called to do something else.
Yeah, I think that's powerful.
It's fear, because if you're afraid of trying something new and leaving what's comfortable, you're operating.
Oh, yeah. Say it again.
Fear.
Say it again.
Well,
it again.
And there's something really powerful in discovering what your own secret sauce is, right? Like, listen, I could say, Joe, you're wrong, because there are Olympics for older people, and I'm at this exact moment, what they're called eludes me, and I don't want to be shamed for that, Alan.
Olympics?
Is it? I don't think it is. Back in my previous life, I was a wedding planner, and I did a wedding for an older couple. They were in their 60s, and he was like a Olympic athlete for 70-year-olds. So, you know, whatever. If you wanted to run that race and win it, you probably could, but maybe not the way you think you have to do it, right? It's
I just Google searched Olympics for old people. It's the Senior Olympics run by the National Senior Games Association.
Great, cool.
Yeah. Got it.
Senior
what
Olympics.
What about the middle-aged Olympics? That's where we are.
You're right? Fucked if you're middle-aged.
I need that.
No, yeah. I love it. So you really started Built for the Stage like as an 18-year-old, but you didn't know that's what you were
conceptually
doing.
Conceptually.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what shifted?
Yeah, so I'm on a contract as an actor after graduation for 2 years. I come back to the city afterwards, a bit burnt out. I still was training people as like my survival job all the time. So when I got back to the city, I had found CrossFit in the meantime while I was on this job. And that was kind of another perfect storm for how Built for the Stage started, more on a business side. So I got back to New York. I started competing in CrossFit and managing a CrossFit gym. And the gym, lucky for me, when I started managing it, was about to go out of business. And one of the members was this successful multimillionaire businessman. And he's like, oh, I love the gym. I don't want it to close. I'll buy it. So he buys the gym, and I'm managing it. And he doesn't know anything about the gym business. So as the owner, he wants to learn the ins and outs so that he could properly, you know, lead it to success, which meant that for the next year, he was going to be there almost every night. So as the manager, I basically got private business school from this guy for like a year. And then another reason why CrossFit was a good thing for me was because CrossFit was kind of a trailblazer in the sense of they were putting workouts online since maybe 2007 or 2008, before apps were a thing, before any of this stuff, like technology wise in the fitness world, was a thing.
They used to get like P90X DVDs and stuff, right?
Sure. Yeah. DVDs. Well, but CrossFit didn't do that. It was all just on the World Wide Web, you know? So when I started, all right. So the last piece of this puzzle is that in the early 2010s, at some point, the Avengers started to get big. So they started doing all these spotlights on Hollywood trainers. This Hollywood trainer trains Chris Evans, and this Hollywood trainer trains Thor Hemsworth, whatever his first name is.
Thor Hemsworth is actually his name.
right. Chris Hemsworth. So I'm sitting there.
I'm Thor Hemsworth.
So I'm in New York, and I'm like, I train all these Broadway people. Like, I'm a Broadway trainer, but I don't hear of a Broadway trainer. So I'm like, I'm going to be that guy. But I also knew that I wanted to be that bridge that, you know, Heather read, you know, that long, exhausting intro she had to read about me. I'm teasing about me. I'm just making fun of me. So
stop. That was so kind of you.
As a trainer, you only have so many hours in the day, you know? So I was like, I'm going to take this online. And another thing I know about actors is that you got a job and you don't have a job. You have money and you don't have money. And in that type of lifestyle, you're not going to pay $100, $150, $200 a session for a personal trainer. You can't do it. So I'm like, I'm going to make this accessible to as many people as I can and put this on an app. And this was in 2017, before like apps were cool, like before the pandemic happened and everyone and their brother tried to go online as a trainer.
All right, one more quick break. Hang on a second. All right, here's the rest of the episode.
Yeah, so that's how that all kind of started. My big break, another opportunity was that I got connected with a kid, Jin Ha. He was cast as the lead across from Clive Owen in the M. Butterfly revival in 2017. And the show actually hired me to help him in this transformation because he plays a woman, a man. He had to have a certain look. So they hired me to help with that. And that's really when I decided I'm going to quit my gym job and quit being an actor and go all in on this thing.
Did your old millionaire boss help you with that? Or was he like,
there's
the door, don't let it hit you on the way out?
Yeah, he helped me without knowing he was helping me. You know, he was helping me for his business, which I was executing. But the entrepreneur in me that was carrying around that pink plastic briefcase as a kid decided that it was time for me to spread my wings and fly, you know?
I love that. That's so cool. And the fact that you went online just from the beginning, I think
brilliant.
Was brilliant. And like the pandemic hits and you're like, so I've got all this online community. You've already got everything. And like, I knew you through this time and like you left the city and you were still training and like, talk to us about that a little bit, because the pandemic for you, was that helpful, hurtful? I mean, like talking about having a job, not having a job, not having money.
Yeah, yeah.
I figured that, you know, that was a little bit affected, but like, did you get a chance to regroup? And also, I know I'm talking a lot here, as part of the intro that Heather wrote, is that, you know, you have coaches. There's more than one of you in the program, which last time I think you and I really talked about Built for the Stage, it was still just you. So you've been able to grow tremendously from that point too.
Yeah. Yeah, the pandemic was tough. I thought that we were going to go out of business for sure, because all the actors went out of business as far as having their jobs. So I made a decision, if people followed along with Built for the Stage and our story, I bumped down everyone's rate. It was $8. I bumped down, which basically like covered the cost of the app, and that's really it. But at that time, I bumped it to $8 and said that I would donate all of that money to the Actors Fund, which I did. So business was good before the pandemic, so I had a little cushion. And when I made this commitment, I didn't, you know, we all thought this was going to be a couple of months maybe. So I made this commitment to do this until like some job opportunities started to happen. Like I said, hey guys, I'll let you know like when I feel as though we can't hold out any longer, I'll let you know that things are going to go back to normal. So people stuck around, new people came, we were able to donate to the Actors Fund every month, which was cool. Yeah, and then eventually things started, the water started to even out a bit with the pandemic, and we persevered, we made it through. But it was, wow, it was one of the more stressful times of my life for sure, like a lot of us.
And were you able to still continue the workouts with these people? I mean, I know that the price has dropped, and I mean, so I guess just to keep the membership, right?
Yeah, yeah, we dropped it just to get people to continue to work out, to continue to be a part of the Built for the Stage family, to also join a cause where their money was going to go to the Actors Fund. And then on my end, expense-wise, business-wise, and personal-wise, I was just eating the money and tapping into savings that I had from the years prior.
Wow.
So
first you're eating pencils and now you're eating money, I guess.
No, well, but
good work out tips.
Shut the fuck up. first of all, I really admire that. And I'm kind of curious how much of that was, I love this community, I love the work I'm doing with this community, and I want to support them. I'm sure some of it was. And how much of it was entrepreneurial, we got to keep these people around, and this is what I think is going to work.
Yeah, it was definitely both, to be transparent. You know, one, on the business side, it's how are we going to survive? And by surviving, I knew that we could do it without making money for those couple of months, like I said, but it will help that they're still around when it does come time to open shop up again, you know? But on the community side, it was like shit was tough. Yeah. And the Actors Fund was one thing that I really knew that helped with rent and medical bills and things of that nature. So I knew that now, then more than ever, people were going to be needing that.
Well, so failure, one of our favorite questions, right? What is your relationship with failure? What's your relationship with setbacks? How do you process it? And it sounds like so far,
you don't really have those.
That you, yeah, you're like, I'm just going to show up here. Oh, fuck, I got the part. I'm just going to walk onto this field. Oh, shit, I'm the Christopher Walken captain. So I'm just going to show up over here and damn it, I have a business now.
Yeah, I love that you're bringing that up, because it wasn't all butterflies and rainbows. And like when people see Built for the Stage, they don't know that I'm working 16 hours a day. They don't know when I'm not working, I'm still working, because all I'm thinking about is that. I'm not doing this as a side hustle. I'm not just like kind of, I'm pouring my heart and soul into it. I'm doing everything that it takes. I'm doing, yeah. the numerous examples, like I'm driving thousands of miles literally to do something. I'm flying to London. A lot of it still is a one-man show, Alan, like you had mentioned, like with the coaches. There is a lot of work that's still going into it. Same with the fitness. I think that, and I'm passionate about this because people so oftentimes in fitness, when they have goals that they're trying to succeed in, or at least they have wishes, not even goals, they oftentimes will be like, oh, it's easy for this person, or it just comes naturally, or genetics, or they have the time and I don't have the time. You know, I think that's a bunch of BS. I think that you have to be uncommon, you have to put in uncommon work. And as humbly as I can, like when we stop hitting record and people don't get to be a little bird on my shoulder, like they don't get to see all the non-sexy stuff. They see me on social media, or they see me at the shows, or they see me doing all this cool shit, but they don't see me at my laptop with my eyes burning and it's 2 a.m. in the morning, or they don't see me talking through my next apparel line with our distributor and why the ink was not correct and why, you know, headaches like this, like we all know, but like it wasn't easy. It still isn't easy. Yeah.
Well, so how do you approach failure though? I mean, because it's tough. Obviously, there's tons that we don't see, but like when the pandemic hits, when you lose a big client, when you have you ever gone to a sport that you haven't been good at? You know, like you know, how do you deal with the rejection of the industry?
Yeah, I've lost championship games, I've lost positions in sports, I've not been selected for this, that, or the other. Like I've gone through stuff like that. Business wise, like and just life in general. My dad always instilled in me when I was younger, never be afraid to ask. And if they say no, you're no further behind than you were before you asked. But if you ask and they say yes, then, you know, there's a win. And to me, that's direct correlation with failure in general, is that I'm always asking or I'm always putting myself out there. And for everything you might see in the public eye that might have been a yes, there were 100 no's before that. No different than an actor. You see the actor on the Broadway stage, but you don't see the gazillion auditions they went to that they didn't get cast in, you know? And that's the same with the failures that I go through. I go through daily. I have clients that say this is a life-changing program that has been the best thing that's ever happened to them. And then I have some clients that try out the program and basically in a couple of select words say I'm dog shit, you know, like
you can't make everybody happy all the time.
Exactly. I have a hat that I wear sometimes on tough days. It says you can't please them all.
You can't. And we're not for everyone, right? I love that saying. You can't be for everyone all the time. They're not going to all like your approach.
So the program being remote, the app being remote, and like you're giving personalized coaching routines remotely, and actors have different sets of equipment in their apartments, tiny apartments. They don't necessarily have a gym. They're on tour in hotels. So what are you doing? Like if I were to sign on and in front of me, I've got a can of soda, sorry, sparkly water, not soda. Sparkly water, full can of, like I've got all these things I could use as weights. What do you recommend to like, when you start the information and collect and make the plan? Where do you start the plan?
Yeah, so everyone signs up, buildforthestage.com. Then once they sign up, they get a questionnaire sent to them. Then the questionnaire is going to ask for injuries. It's going to ask for their fitness background. It's going to ask if they're in a show, out of a show, prepping for a show. And then it's going to ask where what their goals are, of course, and then where they're working out. So let's just go with the tour example. I'm on tour. I'm hotel to hotel from week to week. So we start them out. I start them out with the program based off their goals in that first week. That first week is like a trial week for us. I don't have this equipment. I don't like this movement. This session was too long. I travel on Wednesdays. I need a rest day on Wednesday. So then I make all these notes in their personal profile. And then in week two, now their rest day is on Wednesday. Now I know that they don't have this equipment to use. Now I know that they don't prefer walking lunges because they broke their big toe 7 years ago and it still really bothers them when doing this movement. So that's some of the personalization. And then on top of it, they communicate with me as much as they'd like. So going with the tour example, hey, we just got into a one-nighter. The hotel looks like straight out of a horror film, and all there are is a set of 10-pound dumbbells. So I had them on a full gym program, and then that week I modified to just 10-pound dumbbells. So yeah, it's personalized for sure.
That's so cool.
And how do they receive it? So is it, do you record videos and send, or is it just like a PDF, now go do this thing? Like how is it received?
Yes. Yeah. So you pull up the app, and then each app has like the section you'll be completing. And then it'll list the exercise and it'll have a demo video of me performing. I don't know if you can
kind of see it. Listeners can't see it.
Right, but there's the reps and sets and whatnot, and you would type in your results. You can watch the demo video there.
Look at those triceps.
And then if like something, let's say you had a question, you could video yourself doing 5 reps or so and then attach it to that section of your workout. And then once you submit your workout, I'm going to see your video and be able to review your movement and give you technique feedback. Or any questions you have nutrition wise. Hey, I feel so out of energy during my show, but I don't like to eat like close to my show. Can you help me schedule out my day nutritionally so that I feel as though I'm equipped to do my show with the energy that I need?
That's actually, I love that. That's an interesting question. Do you also have a nutrition background? Have you?
Yeah, so anything that's like on a base level, I coach and help all of our clients. If there's anything that, I don't know, genetically that is above my pay grade, I have 2 nutritionists that I reference my clients to.
That's so cool.
That's cool. You touched real quick on the merch line, and I'm just bringing this up because my favorite one is "What's your money note, bro?"
Yeah,
that's one. He's got a sweatshirt.
We got new swag that just came out. We have Heather mentioned it, but I'm showing Heather and Alan right now. But Jumin Huang from Anne Juliet, we made this design of this power switch, and the on switch says "Dream." And the off switch says sweat.
Dream on.
So dream on and sweat it off, like if things aren't going well.
I love that. I need to get one.
Yeah, like all of your stuff is inspirational / theater chic, tongue in cheek.
I love it.
But what's your money note, bro? You know, it's bridging these two worlds between what you think is traditional, like working out jock and your theater.
Yeah. Growing up in theater, you know, like everyone wants to know your money, you know, like what's your, especially in college, like toxic college, you know, it's like, what's your top note, you know? And it's the same in the gym where the bros will be like, what's your bench, bro? You know? So I figured I'd put the two worlds together and just make this shirt that said, what's your money note, bro?
That's so cool. And you know, the only people who will get it are the people who you want to get it.
Exactly. And that's built for the stage to the T. Like so many people are like, you're really pigeonholing yourself in this audience. And I'm like, that's my audience. Yeah. Like that's who I want to reach. I don't want to reach the gym bro. I don't want to reach the middle-aged office worker. I want to reach a person aspiring to have a career in theater and to equip them with the fitness knowledge they need to know to best do their job on stage.
Creatively, are you purposely choosing the business side, the fitness side, or given, like I found in my own life, right, that when I step away from something that I've been trying for a while, such as auditioning and auditioning and auditioning and auditioning, that I can come back to it with a little bit of newfound, of course, freshness and perspective and whatnot. Are you still are you like, I'm done with performing and I'm okay with that? Or, you know, like me, I haven't been on stage in, God, you know, 15 years and I miss it every day. So
Yeah, I get to see a lot of clients in their shows, and every show I go to, I'm beaming with pride and joy for them. And on the other side of it, I'm also crying inside because I do miss it. And I never intentionally like walked away. Like I came back from that one gig in 2014, burnt out, like I said, and I just said, I'm going to take a little break. And now that break has nearly been 10 years. Hmm. But I do joke around and say, I'm going to come back and take Broadway by storm in my 50s when everyone's like burnt out and jaded and like so over their career. I'm going to come in this fresh face, have an audition for 20, 30 years and be like, what's up, world? I'm here.
I think you all just heard that here first, because based on the conversation we've been having, it doesn't seem like there's much that you decide you're going to go out and do that you then don't do. Now, maybe you don't do it the way you thought you were going to do it, but you seem like a master manifester. And that kind of goes back to, of course, you work hard, you take chances, you take risks, but you get shit done, which is very impressive, including a podcast. So tell us about the Built for the Stage podcast.
Yeah, so I got into podcasts, like, again, luckily before they were cool. I was listening to Guy Raz, How I Built This. It's a business entrepreneur podcast. And he would interview like the top of the top entrepreneurs, and it was all about their story, like the inception of their business and the struggles that they went through. And through all of the clients I was working with, they too had similar paths where their big business was like making it on Broadway. But I, as I was working with them, got to have the insight as to what it took for them to get there. And I was just thinking that there's no one's asking of their story, you know, unless they're like, I don't know, Audra McDonald and Playbill's doing a special on them. But there's gazillions of actors out there that their stories are untold. So I started the podcast in January of 2018, I think. And I had this little microphone that plugged into my cell phone. And then it was a splitter, a lapel mic, and I would put it on my shirt, and then I would put it on my guest shirt, and then I used this app called Anchor to put it on to the podcast world. And I had gotten maybe I was like 20 episodes in, and then this guy, Alan, reached out and was like, hey, I remember actually standing the exact spot in one of my old apartments in Astoria in the kitchen, getting this email from this guy, Alan, and saying that he's going to start this thing called Broadway Podcast Network. And yeah, so I think during the pandemic, when things were just crazy, we took a break. But other than that, every Monday we've put out an episode, and yeah, that's been that.
And interviewing your clients, and it's literally people all around the world. That's what's really impressive. It's like Australian cast and London cast and New York cast, and you're training people all over the fucking world because you can.
Because it's all virtual.
And your reputation has gotten you there.
Yeah, I mean, business-wise, like the number one marketing tool or sales tool out there is your product or service. If your product and service is shit, then you're going to have to work really hard to market and sell it. But if it's good, then the people are going to sell it for you. So as long as I do my part, when someone's sitting at the bar after their show and just hanging with their friends in the cast, and their castmate says, like, I want to get in shape or I want to whatever, they're going to say, hey, I know this guy. He does this amazing thing for actors.
And that's a thing that can really only happen when you're niched down the way that you are, right? Because that's what you do. So it needs to be those performers who can say, I've got the guy. This is the only one.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't talked about it a lot. We touched on just the background, but I'm so grateful for my sports background and that sport, that strength and conditioning coach that I had, and my elements of training with other experts in the field to acquire all of this like top tier athletic training. I've also trained NFL players. I've also trained people that are UFC fighters. I've also trained jiu-jitsu pros. Like, I have that ability, but I've chosen to take that into this world of theater because it transfers so perfectly.
Yeah. I feel like that's a gift for listeners who are also entrepreneurs. Like, it's okay. You can have all of these skills. You can have all of these abilities. Yes, you can help everyone, but you'll probably be more successful if you zero in on one particular type of client. And
The power of no is another big thing that business-wise, speaking of podcasts or books or whatever, I geek out on just self-development. And that's a huge thing, is just the power of no, where it's not always about the yes or the willingness. It's sometimes it's harder to say no. It's harder to say, you know what, this sounds like a cool opportunity, but I'm really dialed in on this other thing. And if I say yes to this thing, it's going to take me away from my main focus and it's going to set me back inevitably. So saying no has been something I still work on to this day, because, you know, I'm always wanting to put my hands in different baskets, but I'm sure Alan will come up with some snarky comment off of putting my hands in different baskets. But
you've been around.
Now we're waiting for it, Alan. Now we're waiting for it.
And
we're
deliver. I mean, what the hell?
I haven't been able to talk yet.
No. I don't know what you're talking about.
Who are you, the Easter Bunny? What? You can't stay out of their baskets.
There you go. There it is.
That was lame. That was lame, bro.
What's your dad joke, bro?
What's your dad joke, bro?
Dude.
Yeah, Joe,
where can we connect with you? Where can we find you on the lines other than BuiltForTheStage.com, right? And Built for the Stage on Instagram. Are you just Built for the Stage everywhere?
So I wanted to be Built for the Stage on Twitter, but it's too long.
Oh.
So I had to make it BFTS Broadway.
Fair.
You can also go to TikTok at Built for the Stage, YouTube Built for the Stage. If you're listening and you want to build a YouTube TikTok dynasty with me, and you're a young video producer out there, please hit me up just to give that shameless plug.
There is no shame in outsourcing to somebody who really likes to do it.
Outsource it.
Yeah.
I would imagine you could do some powerful stuff on YouTube. Joe, you are so cool. You're so much fun. I'm really glad that I got to spend this time with you. Thank you for sharing. I just think there's so many lovely little nuggets of just go out and do the fucking thing.
My ending, like my last little hurrah to everyone would just be, if you want to do it, do it. And if you fail, it doesn't matter. Either keep trying or go to the next thing, because you only get one life. You get one life, and to live a scared or tentative or mediocre life is a disservice to yourself. And lastly, I'll say, stop caring what other people think.
Yep.
Stop. There's this guy that I follow, and he says, you're going to die, and people are going to say that they're busy and can't make it to your funeral. And the people that do go to your funeral are going to be sad for a couple of minutes and then ask what's for lunch or dinner after the service. And then they're going to start talking about who won the Knicks game or who was going to the Tony Awards this year. So like you're going to hold yourself back because of what people think of you. And eventually you're going to die. And those people really meant shit in the whole equation.
Yeah.
So do what you want to do. And stop caring about what people think, because in the end, the only thing that it's cliche, but really it's about you. Yeah. What you think and who you can serve and what you can do for the world is the only thing that you should be focusing on.
I love that.
I wrote those
down. I tell my clients, he gave them all acronyms.
Yogle, you only get one life, and squopped, stop caring what other people think. So you should hashtag squopped.
Okay.
I always tell my clients what other people think of you is none of your business.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, it's exactly what you said. It's totally irrelevant.
No one ever above you or ahead of you is going to judge you. It's only those that are below and behind. So who cares at that point?
Mic drop. And that's the perfect way to end. Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joe Rosco is like a man's theater man. No, a theater man's man. Is that what I'm saying? Yes. A theater man's man.
Yeah. A little bit of a Midas touch there, don't you think?
Right. You know, and now I wonder how much did Midas touch that didn't turn to gold? Because you only hear about the things that turned to gold.
That's what he said.
That was Joe's point. Because you hear about the great stuff. Instagram, this is a common problem that a lot of today's youth, a lot of them are having. They're like, oh man, look at everybody else's life. It's so much better than mine. Like, no, they're only posting the good stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, to Joe's point, it's a lot of busting your ass when you're working by yourself and working remotely and staying self-motivated and all of this. And I've known him for a couple of years. Like you said, like we reached out for BPN purposes in 2019. So I know him about a year before the pandemic, and I've seen the business go in a couple different directions. And he's always just like, all right, here's our next step. We're taking this failure. We're going to change it. We're taking the success. We're going to learn from it. We're going to continue to work. And like, as somebody who just met him today, what did you think?
Yeah, yes, I see that. I mean, he said, you know, YouTube is the next frontier, but there seem to be some obstacles and you got to get the money and blah, blah, blah. Like, just watch it, because in a year, he's going to own YouTube in this niche. I just, very cool, very fun guy who I think really has his eyes on the prize, but I also get the impression that he's willing to just sort of shift as necessary. Oh, okay, yep, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. We'll move here. Okay, we'll go left. Sure. How about, okay, yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. And I get the feeling that he doesn't take things all that personally either, like the failures. And just like anything else, I think a personal failure is going to, or a failure in general is going to sting a little bit. And it's the training and the learning and the mindset you have around how to process it, move through it, and build from it. I won't say move past it, because I don't, you know, who knows if you ever need to move past it, but incorporate it into your toolbox, your pink toolbox of briefcase.
Your glue paint toolbox. That is a brilliant story, by the way.
Right.
The kids... We didn't really unpack this because it wasn't the point of the interview, but why did they want to buy his dried glue? Like, he's that cool. That's the point.
It's just different.
Like, if Joe's selling it, then it's got to be something we want.
Yeah.
And he had, again, he was niched down into that middle school market too, or I think it was even elementary school, right? Like, oh, Joe's doing it. We got to get some of that glue.
You got to get some of that Joe glue. Joglu.
I love it, Joe. I also, you know, he tried to really be a lovely, respectful guest. He did. He was. You were, Joe, a lovely, respectful guest. He was not going to bite with the shut the fuck up, Alan. He was like, no, I don't know the tune. And then finally he's like, fine, fuck it. I'll just sing it. So I appreciate it.
I can annoy
that.
Everyone to the point to say shut the fuck up. That was a personal quest.
That was awesome. I was like, thank you. Thank you for playing. Yeah.
Well, go to builtforthestage.com and check it out, because I think it's great. I think this program he's got is awesome. And like, it's especially for people who are afraid of the gym for whatever reason, just, or don't have the motivation to go. Literally, you sign up. It's easy.
Or the time, or the money, or whatever. Yeah.
And basically, like, he helps you develop this program. Like, oh, if you only got 10 minutes a day and it's only at 6 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon, whatever it is, like, he'll help you. He just wants to help. The core of all of it is making everyone more healthy.
And if you're not an actor, use this as a jumping off point to think about, but you are an entrepreneur, Or you want to create something, use this as a jumping off point to think about how you can pinpoint an audience that's really going to resonate with you.
Mm-hmm.
This is work that I've been doing consistently, and it's a nice little reminder, like, just keep doing it. We can't help everybody. We're not for everybody. And I love it. But we are glad that Was It Chance is for you. And we want to hear from you. We want to know what you think of the show. We want to know how you're out choosing intentional risk, taking intentional risk, manifesting your dreams. Alan, how can folks find us?
At Was It Chance on Instagram. Was It Chance Podcast at gmail.com.
you know, just go typeity type. And you know what? There are plugins from Chrome now that interface with ChatGPT to allow you to write an email. So you can literally install that and just be like, write an email to Heather and Alan about how awesome their podcast is.
Oh.
And then we'll get that email and we'll think you wrote it and we will reply.
And we will reply and we will thank you because we do read all of those. We appreciate it. Hey, listen, we hope that you will go to wherever you enjoy podcasts and like, subscribe, follow, review. It makes a huge difference. It helps people find us and it also just fills our little tiny hearts with joy. So thank you for being here. You've been listening to Was It Chance, the podcast about embracing opportunity and taking intentional risk for your creative life. I'm Heather Vickery.
And I'm Alan Seals.
And talk to you soon.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.